So we did get the information on the memorandum of understanding yesterday afternoon, and there is some boilerplate stuff on there. The U.S., Iran, and allies will end military operations. Everybody's going to respect sovereignty and territorial integrity. And then there's some more controversial things like the United States providing, or the United States and regional partners will develop a plan to provide at least $300 billion for Iran's reconstruction and economic development. There are some shoddy pieces of information here about exactly if Iran and Oman, for example, will be able to charge tolls for vessels traveling through the Strait of Hormuz. It was a bit of a letdown, quite frankly, at least from a U.S. perspective. Let's talk about it. Professor Saeed Khan, who teaches Near Eastern Studies at Wayne State University, joins us once again this morning. Professor, it's great to have you back. What were your initial thoughts when this information became available yesterday?
Well, thanks for having me on again, Chris. When I saw the draft of the memo of understanding, I must admit I was a little bit surprised that the United States not only agreed to this, but that the president was in fact so enthusiastic about it, because essentially what it did was it brought us not just back to the situation of how things were before February 28th and the start of this war, but really opened Iran up to the world when it came to lifting of sanctions and bringing it more into the global economy than it was over 100 days ago.
And the money aspect of it, and we can get to the munitions and the nuclear program in a second, but this $300 billion that's going to be provided for Iran's reconstruction and economic development, the president says that not a dime of U.S. taxpayer dollars will be used towards this. I'm curious to get your perspective on the neighboring Gulf countries that seemed to be, as the war went on, more and more perturbed at Iran for firing missiles into their territory. Are countries going to be jumping at the chomping at the bit to contribute this $300 billion towards Iran after what happened?
Well, to borrow from The Godfather, I think that this is an offer that they cannot refuse. They are the neighbors of Iran. They not only see this agreement as being a de-escalation of the conflict in the immediacy, but they also see this strategically as, again, not just something that would bring about a cessation of hostilities among the countries, but also opportunities for these countries to trade with the largest single country in the region, one that certainly needs infrastructure development and is an important geostrategic country. On the issue regarding the United States and whether taxpayers are going to be on the hook for this, I must say that there's a lot of parallels between the president's proposal regarding the ballroom in the East Wing and this agreement. Somehow or the other, it is very difficult to imagine that the American taxpayers aren't going to be responsible for some of this. But again, as you were saying before regarding Oman and Iran, perhaps proposing a way for tolls to be taken going through the Strait of Hormuz moving forward, that might be part of the way that the $300 billion is subsidized.
You talk about opening Iran to the rest of the world, these assets, these frozen funds that will be made available. And again, just for clarity's sake, this is a memorandum of understanding. This is not a final deal. This is essentially a framework to work on to get to a final deal, hopefully in the next 60 days. But and now reopening these frozen assets, what does that provide for Iran at this point?
I think it provides for Iran much-needed funding for its infrastructure. Remember that in the 2015 Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, also known as the Iran nuclear deal that came about during the Obama administration, which the first Trump administration revoked or pulled the United States out of, there was going to be the release of $150 billion in Iranian assets that have been frozen for the last 47 years in foreign banks, including those in the United States. There was every likelihood that that money was going to go into rebuilding the infrastructure of a country that's been under sanctions for for 47 years. I'll give you just one example. Back in 2015, reports showed that Iran had a 900 commercial aircraft deficit for its aviation sector. There's only two major companies in the world that make the jets that would go ahead and supply Iran. One is Boeing, an American company, and the other is Airbus, which is a European conglomerate. That amount of money could have been used to then hire American workers, European workers. It was something that Iran would have desperately wanted. And that was just the aviation sector. That doesn't even include its travel and tourism, its other infrastructure needs. So this idea that people might be thinking that this money is going to somehow or the other go into funding illicit or improper activity seems to really be very remote.
And then the president's red line, which was that Iran will not have a nuclear weapon, that the nuclear program must be shut down. And he has talked frequently about the uranium dust, the enriched uranium that already exists in Iran. And it seems like that stockpile won't leave Iran. It will just be downgraded. But from what I've seen, that same uranium that gets downgraded can also be can be upgraded once again. So does this actually further the notion of Iran not having a nuclear weapon or nuclear capabilities?
So provision number 9 of the MOU says that Iran will maintain the status quo on its nuclear program, which ironically seems to suggest that even the United States has now acknowledged the many statements that Iran has made that it has not sought a military nuclear program and that this enriched uranium would be for civilian purposes. So you have, a very peculiar a memorandum of understanding. There's only two provisions which I see that could be seen as wins for the United States flat out. One is the opening of the Strait of Hormuz, which, of course, were open before the war began. Mm-hmm. And the other is provision 8, which says that Iran will not ever produce nuclear weapons, which it had already pledged back in 2015. So we really have to wonder then whether this is seen as a net positive. Now, for the Trump administration, it seems that despite what were the motivations and the objectives sought going into the war on February 28th with Israel, now it seems as though the Trump administration has a different metric for victory, which is, again, opening up the Strait of Hormuz and getting yet another assurance from Iran that it's not seeking a military nuclear program. If that's the case, then it certainly is a win for the White House.
Oh, interesting stuff. Always great insight. Professor Saeed Khan, thank you so much for your time. As always, we appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. The other part here, what something that I do not see in the memorandum of understanding is the continuation of funding for proxy groups like Hezbollah, which Israel has been focusing on for several weeks. We're going to continue this conversation coming up next, give you some additional thoughts and some more information. It's next on JR Morning.